after a long break, welcome to the fourth episode of Hypothetically Speaking, a series of self-delusions. So this time, we have planned on doing something really different and fun. Trisha, would you like to tell everyone what are we exactly going to do?
Hey everyone, how are you all doing?
For this episode, Tanya has kept a few chits in a bowl in front of her and I've done the same. I don't know what's written in Tanya's chits and neither does she know what's in mine. Now Tanya will pick a chit and she'll read out what's written on it to me and I'll have to do what the chit asks me to do. After answering, Tanya may ask me follow-up questions. So now when my turn comes, I'll pick a chit from my bowl and I'll ask Tanya questions. So we don't know what's in the other person's chit, but we have to answer no matter how wacky the topic might be. Tanya, would you like to go first?
No, it's fine. You pick up first.
So my first chit says, the sass of female authors.
It's a truth universally acknowledged that a teenage girl dying under the pressure of piling homework would suddenly want to reread all Jane Austen books, even though she's cognizant of the fact that she'll never be able to turn in her assignments on time. Like, can you imagine how wild ladies must have gone for the rejection in Pride and Prejudice right after it was published? This guy is making 10 grand a year and Lizzie's family is expecting to find her accommodation sooner or later. And still, Lizzie is like, no. No true love only. And also, while I have got you here, please accept my invitation to buzz off. I would have lost my damn guard. I would have gone bonkers. And group chats didn't exist at the time, so you just have to hope that your friends are as far as into the book as you are, so you could all meet at the village green and throw a damn riot. Gram worthy? Yes. And also imagine if book authors wrote notes at the end of each chapter the same way it's done in fanfiction. Like Jane Austen finishing a chapter, then putting a line underneath and going, ah, I have finally done it. The poor Mr. Darcy. But how can you propose like this? And you're surprised she rejected you? Unbelievable. I was so excited writing this chapter, guys. I wanted Elizabeth to finally snap. And she did. I'm so thrilled for what happens next. You will never guess the plot twist. Keep reading to find out.
Wow, okay. That was dramatic. But you forgot Mary Shelley, the ambitious 19-year-old.
Oh, I am a 19-year-old female in a world where females are mostly valued as mothers, grieving over the loss of their child, disowned by my father, in dire financial straits, stuck in a country that's not even my own, ignored and cheated on by my husband and belittled by his friends. How am I going to deal with this? Oh, why don't I completely change the rules of literature? And while I'm at it, I'll simultaneously create an entirely new genre and write the first non-religious creation myth.
Yes, but not only Mary Shelley. I believe if you go to Wattpad, you find so many fanfics which have changed the way literature is viewed. Although these are regarded as trash and...
Yes, I know, right? The funny thing is when teenagers write self-invented characters that hang out with their faves all the time, it's cringy and bad fanfiction. But when Dante does it, it's a literary classic and redefines the way we view Catholicism. Dante Alighieri, a 45-year-old man, wrote a scene where he's all, and then I was in hell with my fave Virgil and all his friends said I was really cool and then they all asked me to join their squad and like be their friend and everyone is just like, this is peak literature.
Not just Dante, even 50 Shades of Grey, the fanfic of Twilight, is peak lit.
Who am I to disagree with these people? So now my chit. It says, a horror movie or story you would like to see.
So I want a realistic horror movie where all the characters are intelligent and normal and they're doing all the right things and they take all the proper precautions but they still end up getting killed by the antagonist. I mean, nothing could be scarier when you know that the characters are doing everything right and you believe that this time they won't get killed, but then you realize that everything was in vain and you were staring in the face of futility.
Yeah, I would also like not to yell at the characters for being dumb for once. Okay, so now what about an approach where the roles reverse? Like the murderer or the ghost is confused at the people's attitude.
Okay, so imagine a horror movie where all the characters are Gen Z and they're not particularly scared of dying. So the killer on the phone says, he's like, hey, I'm coming to kill you. And the character is impatient and he says, okay, fine, but hurry up. And now the killer is confused and he asks the person, do you want to die? And the character says, yeah, what kind of a stupid question is that?
Psyching out the killer? Nice. Me likey. By the way, do you have any tips on what to do if the ghost of the guy you wronged for years chases you? You know, just for future reference.
Well, Tanya, step one would be considering that maybe you should not have wronged the guy.
Hey, it's for the future and not for me. As we all know, I'm very focused on boards at the moment.
Sure, we all are. But continuing with the answer, step two would be thinking of how badly you wronged the guy. Then step three, in case you can't figure out how you wronged the guy, get that Ouija board and tell him to whisper to you what he considers wrong. Step four, listen this time at least because you clearly must not have the previous time. Step five, exclaim whoa as you realize your mistakes. Step six, hallelujah, double realization as now you no longer wonder why the ghost has been looking for you. And step seven, yeah, that's all from my side. I'm sorry, you're on your own, kid.
Wow, pretty helpful.
I thought you were focused on your boards, weren't you?
Of course I am. Anyway, pick up your next shit.
Okay. So my next shit says, The Shade of William Shakespeare.
Interesting. He is shady. He's in fact one of the shadiest people I know. Consider Hamlet and Macbeth. Both view death as a solution to their problems. But the only difference is that Hamlet wants to kill himself, but Macbeth would rather kill everybody else. Remember that line from Romeo and Juliet? A rose by any other name would smell as sweet. You know, the rival theater was called The Rose and they had a serious problem. So it wasn't just a beautiful line, but also a pun.
Ooh, shady. Okay, follow up. What would have happened when members of a high school Shakespeare club can't agree on the correct interpretation of Romeo and Juliet and they split into two teams? What do you think would happen?
Oh well, I was thinking about this a few days back. So I thought that one group would say that it is a cautionary tale about the stupidity of youth and shallow lust. The other thinks that it is a beautiful tragedy about poisonous hatred conquered by true love. And the discussion turns into a battle. Reconciliation seems impossible. War is close, the grounds are prepared, the cannonballs are about to be launched. Then, a person from group 1 falls in love with a person from group 2.
Oops, nice thinking, we could make a movie. Okay, so taking this forward, how would you imagine Shakespearean characters as contemporaries?
Well, Romeo and Juliet would definitely be a bickering writing duo. Hamlet is their emo friend who keeps complaining about his stepdad. Othello is a friend who got married too young and had the first ugly divorce of the group over supposed infidelity. Macbeth is the politician friend whose ambitious girlfriend pushed him to cheat a student union election despite the fact that nobody actually noticed nor cared. And William Shakespeare is the parody of writers who use their friends as material for amped up melodramas. Why does that sound familiar? And they colloquially refer to their plays as, what you say? Because their protagonist is obsessed with killing all the characters. Stab, stab, stab.
William throwing the shade indeed. What will you say to people who find Shakespeare boring?
Well, anyone who thinks Shakespeare is boring has missed the greatest stage direction ever. Exit, pursued by the bear. I want that to be the last line of my biography. No kidding, I don't. But you get the idea, right? I think we have slaughtered Shakespeare enough for today. time for our next chit. And it says, SpongeBob SquarePants. And how would you categorize the characters as mental illnesses or deadly sins if you're up for the challenge?
Easy. So, Squidward Tentacles would be Wrath. Patrick Star would be Sloth. Plankton would be Envy. SpongeBob would be Lust. Mr. Krabs, Greed. Gary the Snail, Gluttony. And Sandhya would be Pride.
Huh. You did this one faster than I expected.
Childhood memories. Bring on the next question.
Scary enthusiasm. I'll give you something difficult, don't worry. So, why did Mr. Krabs keep his recipe under Lex level secrecy? Think out of the box, don't give me some normal things like he was a business owner and didn't want to share his trade secrets. Give me something different. Go on.
That's difficult? Oh my. So, I think his recipes could be such a secret. But okay, wait, I will start with this question. How did two crabs end up with a whale as a daughter? So theory suggests that Mr. Krabs was passing a mortally wounded whale and he was unable to help her, so he took her daughter instead and he killed the whale and made it a secret ingredient of his patties. And because whales are huge, it could explain why he's still not run out of his secret ingredient. And who knows, maybe he's also waiting for Pearl to reach her full size so that he can kill her and make patties out of her too. Another reason why his recipes could be such a secret was because maybe Mr. Krabs is a cannibal and he eats other crabs, or at least serves them, because all his recipes, all the names of the food items in the menu have the word crab in it. And plus, he is and his wife are the only crabs in the show, which should not be possible because they live underwater. There have to be more crabs.
Oh shoot, since you know this much, what do you think about the underwater place they live in?
Okay, so there's history behind this. So Bikini Bottoms might be based on a real area. So during the Pearl Harbor bombing, that area sank, and Bikini Bottoms is actually Bikini Atoll, the area that sank due to the nuclear detonator set by the US government. And the characters could be mutants living under the sea. They could also be underwater vampires, as they have been the same ever since the show started past 20 years ago, since the past 20 years. And SpongeBob has been on the wall for Employee of the Month so many times, it shouldn't be possible. And the characters haven't changed at all, like maybe a little bit, but I think that's just because of plot benefits, not because of time.
Interesting. Now try describing a dark relationship that Squidward Tentacles and SpongeBob may have shared. Apart from Squidward's frequent anger sessions, of course.
I think that Squidward has brainwashed SpongeBob, because in the beginning of the show, SpongeBob wasn't as stupid and annoying as he gets, but in the episode Squillium Returns, Squidward asks SpongeBob to forget all his earlier memories, and it was after this particular episode that SpongeBob became super weird and annoying. I mean, there's also this possibility that SpongeBob is high on drugs because he's stupid all the time, and Squidward is bipolar, which would explain why his mood swings are so bad and he's constantly screaming. But I think Squidward has definitely brainwashed SpongeBob into becoming annoying.
Well, I suppose to have some information on the show as well. I know that the show was kind of banned or looked down on because some Ukrainian news agency thought that the show promotes homosexuality, which is weird because SpongeBob is, well, a sponge, and he cannot be either gay or straight. And even if he is gay, what's the problem with that? Yes, so this was my rant on an unsolicited question. I know SpongeBob thinks too, okay?
Proud of you, Tanya. Now next topic, and this is my last chit. It says, guessing badly explain Marvel movie plots.
Ah, okay. So what you mean is, we will explain some Marvel movies badly and the other has to guess, right?
Yes, yeah. That's what we have to do. So I'll start. A man destroys his own planet because he didn't want to share it with his sister after she broke his favorite toy.
This is easy. Thor Ragnarok. The movie was pretty dope. Okay, my turn now. A billionaire practices parenting skills to a kid he saw on YouTube.
Iron Man? Oh wait, no, there's no kid in there. Is it Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah. Next question.
A couple of 90-year-old World War II veterans fight after one forgets the other's name.
Come on, ma'am. There is no way you can beat me on this. Captain America, the Winter Soldier. You guess. Arrogant millionaire waves his arms about a lot to create havoc.
This has to be Iron Man.
No, this is Strange. I mean, Doctor Strange.
He reformed by the end. How can you keep on thinking of him as arrogant? Okay, so now guess this. A scientist on drugs throws a temper tantrum.
I got you. The Incredible Hulk. You should really stop trying to win this. Let's just draw our next chit. So, the next chit says, and this is my last as well, it says, favorite conspiracy theories.
Okay, this one is interesting. Okay, I've heard a lot of conspiracy theories concerning Malala, and they are quite widespread in Pakistan. And there are elements which originate from a 2013 satirical piece in Dawn. So these theories basically allege that she's a Western spy and that her attempted murder by the Taliban in 2012 was actually a secret operation to further discredit the Taliban and was actually organized by her father and the CIA and carried out by author Robert De Niro disguised as an Uzbek homeopath. I mean, that's quite dumb. It was not the case. Like, read her book.
Can I also speak on this one, please? I love conspiracy theories because at first, you think they're utter bullshit and then you start reading these crackpot articles and suddenly you're convinced that Obama is actually a reptilian overlord and the moon landing was faked. No, it wasn't. My favorite conspiracy theory is definitely going to be that aliens built the pyramids.
History TV 18 alert.
Seriously, they're really underestimating the power of slavery and how people used to live at that time. Pyramids are like a large Jenga game that nobody ever really finished.
But then there's this point that pyramids do point to the North Star and they didn't have the internet or cranes. How could they make it?
Stars were the only thing they saw. They were more familiar with the stars in the sky than us. They were so good with this that we are still following the Gregorian calendar. They had it all figured out. Oh, but do you know, before it, they made this lunar calendar and seasonal solar calendars, which left them with 3 extra months to add after the end of 3 years. The Roman politicians were such cunning psychopaths. They got 1 year of office, so to remain one more month in position, they just randomly kept adding months. So by the time Julius Caesar came, it was so out of sync, he stopped everything and made a new one.
So Tanya, how many months do you think they had in a year?
600 crore.
So I think that will be all for today's episode because that was our last chat. Thank you so much, guys, for listening to us. I had a lot of fun while doing this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed too.
Yeah, me too. You guys know the drill by now. Do tell us if you like this episode on our Instagram. And most importantly, do not forget to follow us on Spotify if you still haven't. Stay tuned for the next episode.